Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Today, I have in the studio Christy Trimmer. She is a travel blogger, and she has a connection with Astoria, which is special for her. She's made some major life changes, and she's doing exciting things. We have people who come through the Columbia Pacific region from time to time who are really inspirational, and I have found Christy to be inspirational, and so today we're going to learn her story. And so I'm very pleased to welcome Christy Trimmer to Coast Community Radio. Hi, Christy.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
We're so glad you're here in town today. I know you're on your way to Alaska, so thank you for letting us corral you and talk to you a little bit about your life.
Thank you. Yes.
And so before we talk about the journey that you're on right now, let's talk a little bit about how that journey came to be. So please let the listening audience know a little bit about yourself.
Okay. It started last year. I turned 39 and I had a little bit of a identity crisis, a big one. And it was mostly because, you know, we're always told by your late 30s, you should be married, have kids, the white picket fence, the dog, all of that. And I had none of it. And I was like, okay, I've waited my whole life for Prince Charming to come and to go travel and do that. So he's not coming. What am I going to do now? So I realized I had to give up the Prince Charming dream and create a new one. And so what I did was I decided to run half marathons around the United States. I gave away everything I owned. I put the last little bit into my little car, and I took off from Phoenix, Arizona on May 1st of 2013. And it started out, I was in a conference the February before in San Francisco. And this is always kind of like, everyone's like, how did this happen? And I was running across Golden Gate Bridge, and a little voice just inside me said, you know, you should be running across national monuments and in at the different parks. And then another little voice says, who does that? And it replied, you do. You do that. And so when I got off the bridge, I realized that I had just had a moment that was telling me the way that my life should go. And it was scary. How do you do that? How do you give away and move on? And I had been rooted in Phoenix for 14 years, and it was home, and I loved it there. But I realized to grow and to change as a woman that you sometimes have to take the road less traveled and try something else.
You had an epiphany on the Golden Gate Bridge.
I did.
However, let's go back to childhood and growing up. And so did your life flow along in a fairly circumscribed fashion? I mean, how was that? Tell us about your childhood.
No, not at all. And it's kind of funny now that I really think about it, is my mother was a traveler. Very unconventional. I didn't go to one school for an entire school year until I was in seventh grade. I was going to 3 to 4 schools every year, which I think is leading to what I'm doing now, is trying to find that balance of why did we do that when I was younger and how does that affect me now as an adult? And what I realized is I was one of those really super smart kids that you didn't know what to do with, and the teachers would throw their hands up in the air and say, get this kid out of my class. I was that one. That was me. But then once I started to be put into some gifted programs, my brain started to really do well in schooling. And it always seemed to think along lines of how you do more in you see, with kids who travel all the time, especially European kids, you're so much more worldly at a very young age. And it's just, it was a kind of a different kind of upbringing. One of the things that happened when I was a kid that most, it's a little bit different, is, you know, these days everybody's has a food allergy, it seems. But when we were younger, it was unheard of. I was a very active child, but I was very overweight as a kid, and I had a soy allergy that nobody had diagnosed. They kept claiming that I was closet eating, that I would, you know, grab food and go to the closet. No, I was a star athlete, but I was overweight, and I was made fun of my whole life for being heavy. And finally, I was diagnosed in 2010 that I had the severe soy allergy. And in 2012, in January, is when I started running. So I've only been running a short time, but I couldn't run across the parking lot. There was no way. And there was this running club called Roadrunner Sports. They have stores all over the U.S., and they have these adventure runs where you go and you get these raffle tickets from all the different business owners. But the cool thing is at the end, they had beer, like really good beer from Deschutes. So they're giving away raffle prizes and beer at the end. I'm in. So that's how I started running. But it goes back to when I was a kid, I couldn't understand why I was different. You know, I thought different than everyone else. I looked different from everyone else. And now I'm embracing those differences instead of being ashamed by them.
And so at Phoenix, you had a career before you became a new term. You just told me there's a new term called digital nomad.
Yes.
A digital nomad. So you're a travel blogger and a digital nomad, and you're a runner, and you specialize in photography, running, beer and wine, and that's all factored into your writing of your blog, which is Orange Dragonfly?
No, it's dragonflyrunning.com.
Dragonfly Running.
Yes.
Okay. But there is a symbolism with Orange Dragonfly.
There is. So Orange Dragonfly is my old website, and it was the name of the small boutique marketing firm that I had in Phoenix. And with dragonflies, you know, I have been surrounded by dragonflies my whole life. And when I really started to pay attention, I would see orange dragonflies. Orange dragonflies are not native to the Southwest. You know, that's a dragonfly that usually you only see in like Minnesota. So when I started to really look, and I was like, wow, every time I'm somewhere around water or even in the middle of the city, I've been in the middle of New York and have seen orange dragonflies. What orange dragonflies are, it's a change agent. It is when you see that, it's something's going to major happen in your life. They are also the largest of the dragonflies, the most dominant, the most independent, and they forge a path where all the other dragonflies follow. I'm crazy. Like, I'm kind of in very symbolic to what an orange dragonfly is. I'm a leader. I'm a thought provoker. And really, I love that.
And so when you were in Phoenix, you had another career though. So what did you do before you became a travel blogger? And obviously you had writing skills.
I did. I used to be a technical writer for the Department of Defense way back when. And then I kind of got tired of the big boys club, and I owned a flower shop in Phoenix, and I did that for a number of years and loved it. So I'm a master gardener, a master florist. And after that, I opened up the marketing firm where I specialize in social media. And this is when social media, people didn't know what the terms meant. So teaching somebody how to even log into Facebook, what is Facebook? What is Twitter? That was a harder one to explain, by the way. And really teaching small business owners how to use social. And I really specialized in women business owners. How can they use this new marketing tactic? And then to teach people, it's not about selling online. It's about talking. And women are great at talking, so women are really great at social.
And now social media has proliferated. There's just such a point that it sometimes is a little overwhelming. I mean, there's just so much out there. So it sounds like you were right at the beginning of that. You were at the kind of cutting edge.
I was. I got into it the first year. It really came out. I was dabbling in it. I was going through a divorce at the time. So it was kind of like my escape into the world. And what I didn't realize, I had a business coach that really identified that when people were around me, they kept asking me, what is Facebook? How do I get on it? And so she's like, that should be a service that you would provide. And I told her, I said, who's going to pay me to teach them about Facebook? Everyone. Everyone will pay me to teach.
Well, now, think of all the consultants now to try to help people, you know, whether it's, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, there's so many things.
So many. Well, and I was one of the very first educators in social in Phoenix. And, you know, it was still, everyone was learning. There weren't the rules of this is the right thing to do, wrong thing to do. And I truly loved it. But there came a point where I didn't want to work for clients anymore. And I didn't want to live that life of always searching for that next dollar and living, I think, more of a consumerism life. I wanted simple and basic. And I went through a divorce where I lost everything I had. And through a business. So I walked away with that, with $500 to my name and the clothes on my back. And that was about it.
So you started running the marathons. Once you found you had the soy allergy, you started losing weight, you started running. Mm-hmm. And then be when you had that epiphany on the Golden Gate Bridge? Did you have your marketing firm at that time? And is that
yes.
what you said? Okay. And then you said, okay, I'm leaving Phoenix. I'm leaving all of that. And I'm just going to pack up everything in my car and I'm just going to take off on some sort of journey.
So how that came about, when I left Phoenix, I still had the marketing firm because I was like, oh, I can work for clients on the road. This is going to, you know, be easy. And, you know, I did. So last year I was on the road 202 days. I went through 38 states and I ran 10 half marathons. And it wasn't until almost the end of that journey where I decided I was done. My passion was writing. It had taken me a journey around the U.S. to realize that when you put a keyboard in my hands and let me type, that every stress goes away. I become very raw, emotional, and allow people in to see me. Because otherwise, my walls are pretty high, and I don't allow many people in. But I found that I do in my writing. And it's very authentic, and I love it. And I love being able to be that vulnerable to people.
So the marathon, then, your decision to say, I'm going to run half marathons throughout the United States, that really...
So there's a good story with this.
Okay, let's hear about that story.
Okay. So in 2012, I was running 5Ks every month. That was my goal. And running my first 5K without stopping took me 10 months. It was amazing. I jumped for joy. And I had lunch with a girlfriend that day who was a triathlete. And she looked at me and she goes, these 5Ks are so great, but kind of like patting me on the head like a little kid, but they're not really running. Unless you're running a half marathon, you're not running. You're just out there playing. And she was all of maybe 100 pounds soaking wet. And I was like, really? Really now? So I went home and I signed up for the Rock and Roll Half Marathon in Las Vegas. That was 3 weeks away. At the most I had ever ran at that point was 5 miles. So in 3 weeks, I put 3 more miles under my belt so I could run 8 miles. So I ran my first half marathon in November of 2012, which is 13.1 miles. And when I got done, I was like, I did that. I did that being overweight, somebody telling me I couldn't do it and telling me I wasn't good enough. And so when I was on Golden Gate, I was like, I can run 5Ks around the U.S. or I can run halves. And I want to show everyone else that no matter what size you are, no matter what somebody has told you you can or cannot do, you can do it if you put your mind to it.
You have extraordinary confidence. And I think women certainly are making a lot of headway in the business world and mm-hmm. in general, certainly in developed nations. However, there's still sometimes a reticence. And I think perhaps there's a confidence that comes from not only being athletic, being strong in your body, knowing your body, mm-hmm. and also you have an adventuresome spirit. And so you essentially sold everything and put mm-hmm. a few things in your car. And then why don't you explain what happened when you actually did take off in the car and you had everything in San Francisco in your car?
Okay, so there's two stories. So in the initial journey last year, on the 19th day of the trip, I tore my Achilles. And I'll come back to that because that deals with Astoria. And then I also got broken into when I was in Canada within the same, like a week later, where they stole all my race gear. So I had two really devastating things happen last May. And so then this May, when I decided to continue travel writing and doing this full time, I went to San Francisco and I had just packed up my entire car because I was getting ready to come up through Northern California and Oregon. And somebody broke into my car in a parking garage in San Francisco. I'd had some really bad shoulder issues. And so I couldn't lift my backpack. Maybe 5 times out of the last year I've ever left my backpack in my car, and this was one of them, thinking I'm only going to be in the store a few minutes, it'll be totally fine. So they stole all of my gear, which was about $6,000 worth of tech, my laptop, my cameras, my chargers, everything. Luckily I had my phone on me, but I didn't have a charger to charge it up later that night. And I learned a hard lesson in insurance, that your car insurance doesn't cover the contents of your car. And when you don't have a home, you don't have homeowner's insurance. So I think a lot of people don't realize that little gap in insurance there. So I really was hung out to dry good thing, though, is I have some amazing people in my community and amazing brands rallied around me. Microsoft sent me a Surface. A friend of mine who would not buy me a PC went ahead and gave me a MacBook Air to borrow. And I had GoPro give me a new camera, and some other brands really step forward so I could continue this journey to Alaska. Because I'll be honest, I was sitting in San Francisco and I was like, I'm done. I can't continue. Because without a laptop, I can't make money. And without money, I can't buy gas.
Exactly. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. And today, my guest is Christy Trimmer. She is a travel blogger with a particular interest in photography, running. She runs half marathons, beer and wine, and it's all on her blog, dragonflyrunning.com. And her website is Christy Trimmer, KristiTrimmer.com. But Dragonfly Running is probably the best way if you want to get to her blog. You said that when you sold everything, you packed up your car, you put everything in it, and then you started driving. A lot of people think that's very brave. I mean, a woman, yes, alone in the world, you weren't sure where you were going, you didn't have people you were visiting, you were just taking off and saying, you know, I'm going to review hotels and restaurants and wineries and breweries. Mm-hmm. And as you were on the road, which is a romantic notion, you realize, mm-hmm, there were a couple of things you really, really missed after being on the road for a long time. What are those things?
Yes. So I have now officially been on the road a little over a year. So we're coming up on 13 months. And the things I miss the most is a tub to soak into at the end of the night. Oh, I do miss that. I miss having a kitchen to cook. I'm a really good cook. And, you know, I can campfire cook with the best of them, but sometimes you just really want all those creature comforts of home. And I also, the other two things is I miss my girlfriends. I miss being able to call up my friends and say, hey, do you want to go have a glass of wine? Let's talk. Let's get together. And I can't do that. And then the last one is dating. Man, I kind of miss regular dating life because it's about impossible to do on the road because dating a traveler is tough.
However, you said, yes, so nothing is ever 100% one way or the other perfect in this way or that way. So there are always trade-offs. And so you have this this journey you're now embarking on. You're in Astoria. You're headed up to Alaska, mm-hmm, and you've never been there, and you just have been guided to go there, it sounds like. The signs pointed that was the next step for you. And so how do you, along the way, how do you live? You stay and you write about places, and have people been nice along the way, and what have you found? I mean, I'm sure you've met all kinds of interesting people and stayed in a variety of different situations, whether, yes, it's couch surfing or nice hotels.
Or camping. I camped 100 days last year.
You camped 100 days? 100 but days. And that was in the Southwest or in
throughout the whole United States, the majority of it between Washington and New York was in Washington State, not, mm-hmm, D.C.
Right.
You know, I meet different people every single day. And I think being able to not have that kitchen and not being able to call the girls is okay because I'm living my life and I'm experiencing things that I would not do if I was sitting at home on the couch. And just the sheer beauty of the United States, of what I'm seeing, I can't put a price tag on that. And it is worth the struggles that I go through every day. And, you know, sometimes I get blessed with wonderful hotels, like Cannery Pier is beautiful. And then other times I'm camping out on the beach in severe rain and wind, and I'm thinking, what am I doing? What kind of life is this? And then I wake up and realize it's a new day, it's a new adventure. And I think I'm blessed, but it takes a lot of courage.
Driving, I mean, so you typically try to drive a certain number of hours every day, and then...
So I do two different things. Sometimes if I'll have a paper map of the area, and I'll close my eyes, and I'll just point, and then wherever that stop is, I'll quickly look up and see first, is there a brewery or a winery there? And if there is, I'll reach out and say, hey, can I come in and interview you? Because that's what I'm doing, is interviewing these all the way to Alaska. And then if there's not, I will drive there anyways, because there was a reason why I picked that out on a map. And I have found that's how I came to Astoria last year, was it was picked out on the map, and it was one of the best decisions I ever made.
Why is that? What is your connection with Astoria?
Okay, so I talked a little bit about on day 19 of the trip from last year. It's called Girl on the Run. I was running the Portland half marathon. The day before, I had been out at Rogue Brewery in Newport. And that night when I was camping, I had gotten bit by a spider on my heel, and I didn't realize it. I didn't check my shoes. The number one thing when you're camping is you check your shoes. So during the race at mile 4, I felt my leg was burning. And then at mile 7, my leg went out. And as I fell, I tore my right rotator cuff and I tore my left Achilles tendon. Somehow I got up crying, severe pain, and ran 6 more miles on a torn Achilles. I really don't recommend doing that. So after quite a few beers that night, not going to lie, I looked at the map and everybody kept telling me to go to Seaport. And I was like, no, I'm supposed to go to Astoria. And I knew it. And I GPS it and I came here. I didn't have a place to stay. And I started to look at all the hotels and they were way out of my price range. And I found a little motel at the end of town, these little cottages. And I went up and it was $45 a night, included tax. And I was like, oh, I can afford this for a night. I'm staying. And when I pulled into that cottage, I didn't know it was the one that Arnold Schwarzenegger had stayed in the Kindergarten Cop movie. And there was a brass dragonfly outside of that one house. And I looked to make sure, were there brass dragonflies on all the other houses? There wasn't. It was on this little cottage that I was in. I ended up staying for 5 days. And being here, I healed. I was so emotionally depressed and broken from that fall. I couldn't even hear the words Portland without crying. I couldn't walk. And I was trying to decide, what was I going to do? I'm only 19 days into this trip and I have a major, major injury. And it was a few weeks later, once I had left and I had gained the courage to leave by sitting here and watching the rain pour down. And I sat in your little coffee shop, the Astoria Brewing
Coffee House and
Coffee
Bistro.
House, mm-hmm. Yes. And what they didn't realize is the barista started to bring me drinks because I couldn't get up. But as I'm watching the rain come down, I'm just crying in my corner. And the amount of the community that would come over and say, are you okay? And I was just kind of astounded by that, people reaching out to somebody that they had no idea who I was or what my story was. And it was kind of really comforting.
You are continuing on to Alaska. You're not sure what you're doing there. You know you're going there to write about your adventures on the road. And
yes,
you write about the good and the bad.
Yes.
Mostly, it sounds like there's a lot of good. Obviously, there are setbacks. What would you recommend for... not recommend, because not everyone can do... I mean, the life that you're living is fairly exceptional. I don't think most people could live out of their car for over a year, and now you're and continue on, and then you're writing articles all along the way. You've got your blog going. What has this, I guess, taught you about how to live life, and what would you want others to know about the kind of choices that you've made now in your life?
For me, I think a few of the biggest lessons was, I don't need all of these things to be happy. You know, we are taught to go after all the things, the house, the car, the boat, the jet skis, whatever those things are. And really, for me, all I need is a tank full of gas and somewhere to sleep at night. And it goes back to the caveman type mentality of, do you have lodging? Do you have something to eat? Are your basic needs taken care of? And I think we lose that. And I am grateful that that shield was lifted off my eyes so that I could see really what matters.
Where is home for you then? Is home your car? Is it? Where is home? What does home mean to you now?
Home is anywhere I can find Wi-Fi.
Home is anywhere you can find Wi-Fi. Okay.
To be honest, honestly, on a not funny note, it really is my car. When I sit in my car, I feel at home. I feel at peace. And I know it sounds a little strange. My hometown, I'm born in Tucson. All my friends and family are in Phoenix. So I am a West Coast girl. But now I have friends all over the U.S. and in different countries. And I am making home everywhere I go.
And the fear factor, we just have a few minutes left here, but I know that a lot of our listeners will say, she's a woman alone, you're very attractive, and you're in your car on your own. Do you have certain rules, like I will not drive after dark, or you know, if I break down, I wouldn't want to be? I mean, how do you deal with the obvious kind of fears and dangerous situations that could occur for a woman just, you know, on her own, traveling alone all over the United States? And I'm not sure where you're going after Alaska. You don't even know yet, do you?
I'm probably coming back to San Francisco and parking the car for a little bit and then flying out to destinations for the rest of the year. So I'll continue traveling. I just won't be doing it by car.
Okay. So the car travel will end sometime this year, and then there'll be some, journeys by air.
So the fear thing, there are two things. When I started the trip, I wrote down every single fear I had. And then I set out to conquer each of those fears so that I was not afraid anymore. I was initially afraid of bridges and afraid of going around cliffs. And now I can't imagine not driving the Oregon coast and all of the bridges. I was a fear of being attacked out on the road. I do carry a handgun. I a black belt in Taekwondo. I am very knowledgeable in how to protect myself. But I'm also very clued into, if it happens, it's going to happen. And am I going to be able to handle it? If I die out here, I'm going to die doing what I love. And so I've really resolved that in myself, that I put myself into danger. And I know that I do not drive at night. I try not to drive more than 8 hours in a day. That's usually my limit. And if I'm tired and I need to sleep, then I will pull over into a rest stop kind of thing. So I, the last really thing with safety is there's an app called Life 360 that will GPS me everywhere, and my dad watches me everywhere I go, and there's a little button I can push that will send police my way if I need it.
Oh, Life 360.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's a really good thing. Gosh, we are running out of time. We could talk for such a long time. Any other last thing that you'd like to let the listening audience know? I know that you've made a drastic, radical change in your life. Mm-hmm. It's very inspiring to a lot of people who feel that they're stuck in situations where they don't have options. There are always options. And you made a dramatic shift, and it seems to be working for you.
It is. I'm really happy. I have very little money, but I'm so happy. My biggest advice is, think of the thing that you've always wanted to do, that little nagging passion in the back of your brain that you've never let out, and do it. Don't let things stop you. Just do it.
Well, Chrissy, we're going to have to find out more about your journey. I guess we'll be looking at your blog. And again, you can find out about Chrissy Trimmer's journey to Alaska and other points. She's been on the road for over a year. Now she is continuing on. Dragonflyrunning.com will take you to the Chrissy Trimmer website, and then you can find out more about her. And I'm sure she'll be back to a story, because it sounds like you have had good experiences here.
I love it here.
Excellent.
It's really
been great to talk to you and have you here. So, thanks a million for coming in and doing this on your journey, because I know you're out and about.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank so much Kathleen Morgane for engineering today, and also my gratitude to local talented banjo instructor Michael Brunn for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath. With gratitude for all the good things in your life, focus on those things. There will always be things that aren't going well, but focus on the things that are going well, and then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can, and for being here now in this moment, the only moment which exists on the amazing planet we call Earth.